This is Kate Magruder with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Something happened here about 50 years ago when hundreds and hundreds of young men and women streamed into the hills, valleys, and coastal areas of this county looking for a place to create new ways of living. The following is a half-hour conversation I had with Mika Wawona. She moved to the Ukiah area in the early 1970s. She bought land on McNabb Ranch with the money she was supposed to spend on college. She lived in a camper on the back of her truck with her tiny baby, and for a short while she sold worms for bait at the Redwood Valley store. That was before Mika helped launch the State Forest Practice Act and California's Conservation Corps. As a lifelong activist, Mika epitomized for many of us how to live a different way on the land responsibly.
I am Mika Wawona, a longtime resident here since 1972, I'm thinking. I was born in Otten, Oklahoma, actually in Fort Sill, where Geronimo was imprisoned, 1953. When I first was able to get onto the land, I was living in a camper on the back of my pickup truck, and I had my little baby, who was born in, well, at Stanford, but we had to go there from Santa Cruz Mountains, and my partner had been picked up for being AWOL. He had come home from his first tour of duty for a leave of absence, and then he was going to be going back, and there was no way he could go back. So he went AWOL, and that was very, very difficult, and he had to hide for quite a while. There was a number of people going AWOL, and the repercussions of that were great. So there I was with me and my little baby in the camper on the back of the pickup truck. And I had heard you could go to the Lake Mendocino, had some bathrooms with showers in them. And there I'd meet these like-minded people from different parts of inland Mendocino County. And I met a man who had a pickup truck. And somehow I found out or asked, oh yeah, in Redwood Valley, the hamlet of Redwood Valley, there was a long shed or barn that was dilapidated, was falling apart. And I found out who the owner was by going to the corner, the store on the corner there of the intersection Redwood Valley. And they told me who did. So I contacted them and I said, I have a truck and a crew and we'll take this barn down for you if you want. And they said, yes. Of course, back then you didn't worry about liability or any of that stuff. And so we did that. We took the person that I was doing it with was on Greenfield Ranch. So one of the truckloads would go to his place and the other truckload would go down to McNabb to my place. And it was wonderful wood, old growth redwood. It was amazing of all the 2x4s and then the shakes and shingles and the planks. And we were so fortunate. So built a cabin and here's the other part of it. I didn't do it all by myself, that's for sure. Yes, so my partner was still back in Fort Ord doing time for being AWOL. Going back down to that place at the camp at Lake Mendocino, there was a couple from the southeast. And I said, would you be into helping me build a cabin? And you can stay there for at least the winter and spring and we can figure things out. And they said, yes. And so they helped me do that. The guy knew what he was doing. We built one and a half stories. You know, the second story was only half. And so I lived there by myself because my partner was still at Fort Ord. And yeah, I had my little baby, and that was pretty amazing. And I don't know if I should say who my little baby is now. She's the, my daughter is the deputy auditor of Mendocino County. So, wow, math was never my thing. So,
what did you do for money? How did you begin to find your way, find your footing?
My first job up here. I used to work at Macy's and Emporium back down in the Bay Area when I was in Palo Alto, and my first job was, I don't know how I got to this. I raised worms. I was into worms for humiculture, for what it did for your gardens, and amazing. You could grow so much in a small area with that, the richness. And then somebody said, well, you've got so many worms in here, you could sell them for bait. And there was a guy down in Redwood Valley, at the Redwood Valley store, that sold bait. So I sold bait. I sold worms, bait worms. It's pretty funny. And then, you know, Shamise, my daughter, could help me with that. She'd love to pick the worms out of the thing. I still have some of the bins, but, you know, that's not what I do for a living now. Oh, yeah. And then I started noticing that things needed to happen. There was damaged watersheds and by the bad roads put in. There was poor logging practices happened. All of that stuff. And I lived intimately with the consequences if things were not done well according to the laws of watershed function. And so, I mean, there was a long period of time where, you know, it was just one disaster after another, and the county had to even put bridges in because roads would go out because the county didn't have the staff or even the knowledge, really, to get ahead of these kinds of things. So the county had been behind and just struggling to catch up with the rate of people moving in and doing these things and catching up with what the regulations were and how to apply them. And stuff was going to court, and that was tying a bunch of stuff up. So I realized a lot of things needed to happen, both in watershed restoration and in forest thinning management. What forestry was going on was just simply cherry picking. All it was not forestry. It was timber cutting. It was taking the best of the trees out of the stand and leaving everything else behind. And there was no rules about where you run your tractor up and down the hill to drag logs out. There was nothing. There was no Forest Practice Act. And so that was really turning a lot of us that were living out in the hills, it was really damaging. This filled the creeks, the fish were buried, the eggs were buried, the creeks and rivers would go out of their banks and wash things out. I went with some other folks to Washington, D.C., Becking, Rudy Becking, professor at UC Humboldt, and John Amadeo, and different people from the North Coast Environmental Center. We went to Washington, D.C., and had showed these big pictures of the damage, and satellite photographs showed the damage, the extent of the damage. It was like, oh, you can't argue with that. And so I remember talking with Senator Aberesk, and I had a slideshow presentation, and it was quiet in the room. A lot of people go there for about this or that, but when you got footage and you got satellite photos and you go, yeah, this is a problem, can you see that? He said to his staff that was sitting there in the hearing, he said, give this, work with this woman, give her what she wants. And they did. So, which was to develop a watershed restoration program for Redwood National Park and to make it be a template for what needed to happen. So then I went to Sacramento because we needed, it wasn't just a federal, that was federal with Redwood National Park and the damage there, but we needed a state regulations because it was picking up and going faster by the corporations. And so a group of us, including some of the people I just mentioned, Rudy Becking and John Amadeo and different people from Humboldt County, but also activists from Mendocino County, we went to Sacramento to Jerry Brown's office. That was his first term. And we did a sit-in in his office because actually it was my idea. I heard that because I was talking to one of the staff people there in one of the Senate committees, and he said that Walter Mondale was going to be coming. The candidates for president were coming into the Capitol, California Capitol, to do the glad handing and meet with people to support them and fall in line with them in their campaigns. So we knew that was the time to do it because the TV crews were going to be there. So we had these massive aerial photographs, big wall size, and pictures of old growth trees and the forest itself. So the place was mobbed with the media. Jerry Brown had one of his staff people come and talk to me and say, I'd like to go to dinner. Let's go to dinner and let's talk about this. So yay, that was great. Because, you know, he had seen the stuff himself and he saw how it caught people's eyes. And well, I think when we were talking with Jerry Brown and trying to describe to him what was going on, what the problem was how much it impacted so many different resources. It wasn't just forestry. It had to be a broader view because it was causing erosion. It was causing water quality problems. It was killing fish and smothering fish eggs and spawning, and had all these ramifications, and also was being cut in such a way, high grading the very best trees always, was leaving a forest stand with not good structure, not good wood for the next harvest around or the next generation. So there were so many aspects. We needed a Forest Practice Act. And that legislation came up during Jerry Brown's term, and it happened. So there was enough hue and cry, thank goodness, that it happened at least then. It was too bad so much was lost prior to that. But I think also people started realizing you could actually go to the Capitol and get through to somebody, especially if you did it with others. Wasn't good for loggers either. If you tear up the forest, there's not going to be a good stand next time around. Or loggers liked fishing, you know, a lot of them lived, you know, that was their lifestyle. So they were having a big lesson in seeing how this was causing such damage to spawning grounds, etc. So it started bringing different facets of the community together. And there was a lot more meetings. Sometimes they were some yelling back and forth, but some good facilitators would keep you on track, and there would be movement, and some things were changed, and you got more agreement, and you just had to do it because we were sort of at the beginning of this unraveling or forming some new kind of cohesion in community before state and federal laws could figure out what needed to be done. Local people were seeing the consequences and coming together and putting time and energy in, and some would yell at each other, others would sit down and go, let's have a committee and let's get into this. And so change happened and people really dug in.
This is Kate Magruder. We're listening to an interview I did with Mika Wawona for Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Mika has a homestead on Greenfield Ranch, but I interviewed her at her house in Ukiah. At the tail end of the interview, you'll hear a phone ringing in the background. We didn't answer it. Let's get back to Mika Wawona. So let's cut to you moving to Greenfield Ranch.
In the later 70s, I decided to move to Greenfield Ranch because it had a unifying structure. It had a board of directors, a common land where community meetings and gatherings would happen. And McNabb Ranch didn't have that. Very few, if any, had that at that time because there was no Subdivision Act. But the developer was wise enough to do that. So there was a whole structure, corporate structure, and it was great. So I decided to move with my new partner to Greenfield Ranch, to a property that had, it was just all kinds of resources. It was wonderful, a nice cabin. And I had really wanted to live in a group of people, not just in a couple, because I could see the need for living on the land. There's so much to do if you're going to be there responsibly and provide for yourselves. So we did have a commune there, and my partner, when we didn't have a place to live or move into, there was a giant, giant redwood tree that the fire had burned the inside out. You'll find these throughout the redwood forests. And he turned that into a wonderful bedroom with a little propane stovetop thing. And I could make breakfast for my daughter, and she could walk down the little road and path to the Greenfield Ranch House to school, because there was teachers, retired or migrated teachers from the Berkeley area that came. And here we had a Greenfield school, and there was quite a couple of age groups of grades there. So it was really very wonderful and rustic, and we learned so many skills, and it was so empowering. You know, and we'd go tear down a building and bring the materials back and work together and learn how to saw, hammer, use chainsaws and power tools. And we shared pickup trucks, and we did a lot of work parties together and learned how to work together. And I think we found that if you contribute in a community, it's just so uplifting. It makes you feel secure, makes you feel like you have a place, you can contribute something, and you're learning constantly instead of doing it the same old, same old, same old, if that one's not really working for you. You know, something that really just sort of came up for me is a realization that people care deeply for one another, that the community around them, around us, is more hopeful. You feel like you can do, we can do, and we feel more secure. It's sustainable. We can live right by what we believed instead of feeling, oh gosh, I know this isn't the best way, but it's the quickest, or the weather's coming in, so I've just got to do it this way or that way. But living in a small community, I'm not saying you could do this in a larger, I can't imagine it myself in a giant commune, but small little neighborhood or couple neighbors, families, it was just amazing. And then we went around from place to place when a house building raising was happening, or barn raising, or putting up fencing, or making a better road and things like that, helping to develop water. And oh, we got to figure it out. I don't want to take your water from you, so let's figure out the right way so we're managing this properly, rather than each man and woman for themselves. So it was really invigorating and exciting to see that we could live a different way. And instead of like necessarily in a subdivision or he comes first, whoever gets first gets the spoil, you know. And the ranch is still working that way. It still has a great governing body, and the lands are better than they were. We've improved, and it's wonderful.
So tell me about the state, the California CCC.
On another occasion, some of us had talked about the need for a California Conservation Corps because there was so much damage being done to our forests and our waterways. And there was a federal CCC, but we figured out that we shouldn't pattern it exactly the same way. So we had to do a lot of just research about how to make something like this happen. And I had heard when I was at UC Santa Cruz, and Paige Smith and Paul Lee were professors there, and they were involved in the original CCC during the Depression, and they were very discouraged because it was like man against nature, and like doing almost like development work or something. And they didn't like that. They didn't want that. And they formed a esprit de corps, of which Paige Smith and Paul Lee were very involved. And they said, we need to do away with man against nature. We need to work with nature and learn from nature. And then that can change as we go forward how we live in nature, or, you know, with our resources. They were just marvelous and so well thought of and loved in the community. And we asked them if they would help us start up a new California Conservation Corps. So they were so gracious to talk with us, and we said, we have a lot of energy. We want to make something like this happen in our generation. It's so needed even more than before. And could you help us with knowing how best to put that together? And so then we had a conference. We figured out that the Mendocino Woodlands, just outside of town of Mendocino and on the Big River, there was an old encampment there that was built, beautiful lodges and cabins. And it was built decades and decades before, when a Finnish ship went ashore off of the town of Mendocino, the hamlet of Mendocino, and these Finnish sailors came ashore, and they needed housing because this was there was just a little hamlet at Mendocino, and they couldn't be overwhelmed with this huge, I forget how many crew on there. And so they went to work on Big River, the banks of Big River, and cut down trees and built just stunning cabins and lodges, because it was apparently a huge ship, a lot of sailors and crew, just beautiful work. So when we were starting the CCC, we thought, gee, we should do it there, the Mendocino Woodlands. So when we were down in Santa Cruz talking about, let's have this encampment and talk about this and how it needs to evolve or be developed so we don't make mistakes and we're not wasting time doing it right or in the best form. So there was all kinds of people from the state of California. Jerry Brown was like, get over there and get on this. So we had this big conference there, and there were people from different departments and agencies to how do we need this? If we do, what agencies could use this help? This isn't a private undertaking. This is for the state, and there's a lot of things that the state has to deal with, whether it's around riverbanks or developments happen around state land. So let's train people, let's do this, and have a core ourselves, a conservation core ourselves. And so it was so invigorating that the people that came from the different counties and were so excited about it because they saw the need for it. So it was wonderful to work with groups of people, break down into committees, and come up with, here's how we think we can deal with this problem or this or that. And that the CCC is still happening today, and it helps young people realize there's something else there than simply desk jobs or going into a corporation or whatever. We need to take care of our wetlands and our rivers and our mountains and hills and all that stuff. And they weren't teaching it in school. So a lot of people, they were interested in those kinds of careers and bringing them back to their community, what they learned, and started new things in other ways, like New Growth Forestry. When we first started New Growth Forestry, we went under partnership rules. It was much easier to do. And it was made up of a group of people from mostly Greenfield Ranch who had been working together in the esprit de corps, the people trying to figure out how to do things right and better. So we thought, well, we should form our own group doing this. We were training people to do this. Why don't we form a business to do this? So we figured out how to do a partnership. And most of the people from Greenfield Ranch, they had experience working together on road systems and firewood cutting and house building, where you learn to work with a crew of people and you don't always get your way, but you got, you mesh all these good ideas together and things come out wonderful.
What was wonderful about doing that work with that group of people in place called like the Ventana Wilderness?
And that was our first job. It was just behind Big Sur. So it was the backside of Big Sur, way out in Arroyo Seco, it was a wilderness area. It was so exciting. All of us loved spending time outside, campfire, children, in tow, and just beautiful surroundings. And we were young, we could do it. Probably 10 or 20 years later, we might not want to, but it was just fabulous. And that was the time, too, that we started having sweat lodges. Like, not exactly like the real thing, Native American sweat lodges, but we improvised, and that's how we got clean. So we'd get in there and sweat and sing songs and prayers and praise each other or say, we need to talk about some stuff tonight or tomorrow morning, or whatever. It was so wonderful to be with family and friends and community, and that was doing our livelihoods and learning from each other. How to use tools, how to cook, how to use a chainsaw, whatever.
How were you moving through the Ventana Wilderness? What was your mode of transportation?
When we did our work there, getting our tools in, our camp supplies, food, runs, all of that, it was mostly packed in, but we had horses and a donkey. The donkey kept the horse string more mellow and assured. And so we'd pack up, and we had our packer crew, who the mostly guys. And Sarah McCarter, yes. So she was really the only woman that was hardcore into it. As time went on, we got more contracts, and then we decided, we better form a corporation that has more cover the butt type of stuff. So we got a contract for the Sierra Pack Trail, but that wasn't the exact name of it. And so we were up there for two different summers, the entire summers, with our whole families, all the kids in tow. Kids had chores and jobs, tending the animals, picking their feet, feeding them, and babies were there, and it was it was amazing. We loved it. And we had enough skills of cooperation from our first jobs and from living in community at Greenfield Ranch in these communes. So it was perfect. We were young, and our kids got so much invigorated, and had to have a job to do and to see the change of before and after, that you could make changes and make things better. So we spent two different summers doing that, and it was just the time of our lives. We loved that so much. We were the right age and a good group working together. It occurs to me to sing one of the songs that we would sing in the sweat lodge. I'm not sure what its origin is. Spreading our long wing feathers as we fly. Spreading our long wing feathers as we fly. We circle around. We circle around the boundaries of the earth. You sing me and I sing you, we'll sing each other a song. You sing me, I sing you, we'll bring each other along. Ho! Is that it?
Who in the town of Ukiah or in the county, who has been, as you found your footing in Ukiah, who reached out to you? Who helped you? Who recognized you?
Marge Boynton was on a wonderful, smart, savvy, funny gal, but she was very, very good at getting, things done. She was the head of the Planning Commission for a very long time and just very adept at it. And we would go for walks and talk. And there were some things we didn't agree about, and other things we did, and we really enjoyed each other's company, so we went for lots of walks. So she helped me, in terms of the subdivision. We needed to get ahead, not just Mendocino County drag its feet and let all this damage and wasted opportunity happen. You can't redo road systems and rework all this stuff. So she was very open-minded and very savvy and very good at going to different people and kind of helping turn some heads around in terms of, we need some more rules and regulations.
Much of what you've said has spoken to how this experience has shaped you. But if you were going to add anything to that, the fact that you were compelled, you were drawn here.
I believe that people came here to Mendocino County from all these other places and walks of life because they were ready for change. They wanted to live in community, not just in a subdivision and you see somebody at the grocery store or you wave from your car when you're going into your house. It was like to be more than just neighbors, but let's work together so that this place can be right for the future, be something sustainable, something where I want to grow old in and my children to live in and grandchildren. And people were willing to dig in. They saw the hope, the prospect for doing that together. And so many, diverse people, really, I think was just a big part of it as well. And people's willingness to try something new and struggle for it if necessary. So I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. And everybody I know is going, I wish I could move out of here. Everybody's, it seems like as we get older, people go, oh, hallelujah, we came here. So bless us all. We are so fortunate in this time in our lives to be together and work together and play together, and we'll just continue doing more and more. And I hope our children will stay here. Well, so many of them are. We're old enough that our children are here, and we're hoping that their children will. Bless our hearts.
We've been listening to an edited interview with Mika Wawona as part of Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. This program airs on KZYX at 3:30 on Thursday afternoons. You can also catch shorter excerpts during the news hour on Thursday mornings at 7:45, 8:45, and 6 p.m. They're also on the KZYX website and Facebook page, along with photos and even longer interviews.
Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, and Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.